Chapter 7. It was raining in Bayalu, and the rented Mercedes slid past the grilled and unlit windows of cautious Greek and Armenian jewelers. The street was almost empty, only a few dark-coated figures on the sidewalks turning to stare after the car. This was formerly the prosperous European section of Ottoman Istanbul, purred the Mercedes.
"So it's gone downhill," Case said.
"The Hiltons in Cumhuriyet Kadesi," Molly said. She settled back against the car's gray ultra suede.
"How come Armitage flies alone?"
Case asked. He had a headache.
"'Cause you get up his nose. You're sure getting up mine."
He wanted to tell her the Corto story, but decided against it. He'd used a sleep derm on the plane. The road in from the airport had been dead straight, like a neat incision laying the city open. He'd watched the crazy walls of patchwork wooden tenements slide by, condos, arcologies, grim housing projects, more walls of plywood and corrugated iron. The Finn, in a new Shinjuku suit, Sararimen black, was waiting sourly in the Hilton lobby, marooned on a velour armchair in a sea of pale blue carpeting.
"Christ," Molly said. "Rat in a business suit."
They crossed the lobby.
"How much you get paid to come over here, Finn?"
She lowered her bag beside the armchair.
"Bet not as much as you get for wearing that suit, huh?"
The Finn's upper lips drew back.
"Not enough, sweetmeat."
He handed her a magnetic key with a round yellow tag.
"You're registered already. Poncho's upstairs."
He looked around.
"This town sucks."
"You get agoraphobic, they take you out from under a dome. Just pretend it's Brooklyn or something." She twirled the key around a finger. "You here as valet or what?"
"I gotta check out some guy's implants,"
the Finn said.
"How about my deck?"
Case asked.
The Finn winced. "Observe the protocol. Ask the boss."
Molly's fingers moved in the shadow of her jacket, a flicker of jive. The Finn watched, then nodded.
"Yeah," she said. "I know who that is."
She jerked her head in the direction of the elevators.
"Come on, cowboy."
Case followed her with both bags. Their room might have been the one in Chiba where he'd first seen Armitage. He went to the window, in the morning, almost expecting to see Tokyo Bay. There was another hotel across the street. It was still raining. A few letter writers had taken refuge in doorways, their old voice printers wrapped in sheets of clear plastic, evidence that the written word still enjoyed a certain prestige here. It was a sluggish country. He watched a dull black Citroen sedan, a primitive hydrogen cell conversion, as it disgorged five sullen-looking Turkish officers in rumpled green uniforms. They entered the hotel across the street. He glanced back at the bed, at Molly, and her paleness struck him. She'd left the micropore cast on the bed slab in their loft, beside the transdermal inducer. Her glasses reflected part of the room's light fixture. He had the phone in his hand before it had a chance to ring twice.
"Glad you're up," Armitage said. "I'm just. Lady's still under. Listen, boss, I think it's maybe time we have a little talk. I think I work better if I know a little more about what I'm doing."
Silence on the line. Case bit his lip.
"You know as much as you need to. Maybe more."
"You think so?"
"Get dressed, Case. Get her up. You'll have a caller in about 15 minutes. His name is Terzabastian."
The phone bleated softly. Armitage was gone.
"Wake up, baby," Case said. "Biz."
"I've been awake an hour already."
The mirrors turned.
"We got a Jersey Bastion coming up."
"You got an ear for language, Case. Bet you're part Armenian. That's the eye Armitage has had on Riviera. Help me up."
Terzabastian proved to be a young man in a gray suit and gold-framed mirrored glasses. His white shirt was open at the collar, revealing a mat of dark hair so dense that Case at first mistook it for some kind of t-shirt. He arrived with a black Hilton tray arranged with three tiny, fragrant cups of thick black coffee and three sticky, straw-colored Oriental sweets.
"We must, as you say in Inglitz, take this one very easy."
He seemed to stare pointedly at Molly, but at last he removed the silver glasses. His eyes were a dark brown that matched the shade of his very short military-cut hair. He smiled.
"It is better this way, yes? Else we make the tunnel infinity, mirror into mirror. You particularly," he said to her, "must take care. In Turkey, there is disapproval of women who sport such modifications."
Molly bit one of the pastries in half.
"It's my show, Jack," she said, her mouth full.
She chewed, swallowed, and licked her lips.
"I know about you. Stool for the military, right?"
Her hand slid lazily into the front of her jacket and came out with the Fletcher. Case hadn't known she had it.
"Very easy, please,"
Terzabastian said, his white china thimble frozen centimeters from his lips. She extended the gun.
"Maybe you get the explosives, lots of them, or maybe you get a cancer. One dart, shitface. You won't feel it for months."
"Please, you call this in Inglitz making me very tight?"
"I call it a bad morning. Now tell us about your man and get your ass out of here."
She put the gun away.
"He is living in Fener, at Kuchuk Gulhan Dajesi 14. I have his tunnel route, nightly to the bazaar. He performs most recently at the Yeneshihir Palace Oteli, a modern place in the style touristic, but it has been arranged that the police have shown a certain interest in these shows. The Yeneshihir management has grown nervous."
He smiled. He smelled of some metallic aftershave.
"I want to know about the implants," she said, massaging her thigh. "I want to know exactly what he can do."
Terzabastian nodded.
"Worst is, how you say in English, the subliminals."
He made the word four careful syllables.
"On our left,"
said the Mercedes, as it steered through a maze of rainy streets,
"is Kapalı Karşı, the Grand Bazaar."
Beside Case, the Finn made an appreciative noise, but he was looking in the wrong direction. The right side of the street was lined with miniature scrapyards. Case saw a gutted locomotive atop rust-stained, broken lengths of fluted marble. Headless marble statues were stacked like firewood.
"Homesick?" Case asked.
"Place sucks,"
the Finn said. His black silk tie was starting to resemble a worn carbon ribbon. There were medallions of kebab gravy and fried egg on the lapels of the new suit.
"Hey, Jersey,"
Case said to the Armenian, who sat behind them.
"Where'd this guy get his stuff installed?" "In Chiba City. He has no left lung. The other is boosted, is how you say it. Anyone might buy these implants, but this one is most talented."
The Mercedes swerved, avoiding a balloon-tired dray stacked with hides.
"I have followed him in the street and seen a dozen cycles fall, near him, in a day. Find the cyclist in a hospital, the story is always the same. A scorpion poised beside a brake lever."
"What you see is what you get, yeah,"
the Finn said.
"I seen the schematics on the guy's silicon. Very flash. What he imagines, you see. I figure he could narrow it to a pulse and fry a retina over easy."
"You have told this to your woman friend?"
Terzabastian leaned forward between the ultra-suede buckets.
"In Turkey, women are still women. This one."
The Finn snorted.
"She'd have you wearing your balls for a bow tie if you looked at her cross-eyed."
"I do not understand this idiom."
"That's okay," Case said. "Means shut up." The Armenian sat back, leaving a metallic edge of aftershave. He began to whisper to a Sanyo transceiver in a strange salad of Greek, French, Turkish, isolated fragments of English. The transceiver answered in French. The Mercedes swung smoothly around a corner. "The Spice Bazaar, sometimes called the Egyptian Bazaar," the car said, "was erected on the site of an earlier bazaar erected by Sultan Hatice in 1660. This is the city's central market for spices, software, perfumes, drugs."
"Drugs," Case said, watching the car's wipers cross and recross the bulletproof Lexan. "What's that you said before, Jersey, about this Riviera being wired?"
"A mixture of cocaine and meperidine, yes."
The Armenian went back to the conversation he was having with Bassanio.
"Demerol, they used to call that," said the Finn. "He's a speedball artist. Funny class of people you're mixing with, Case."
"Never mind," Case said, turning up the collar of his jacket. "We'll get the poor fucker a new pancreas or something."
Once they entered the bazaar, the Finn brightened noticeably, as though he were comforted by the crowd density and the sense of enclosure. They walked with the Armenian along a broad concourse, beneath soot-stained sheets of plastic and green-painted ironwork out of the age of steam. 1,000 suspended ads writhed and flickered.
"Hey, Christ," the Finn said, taking Case's arm. "Look at that." He pointed. "It's a horse, man. You ever see a horse?"
Case glanced at the embalmed animal and shook his head. It was displayed on a sort of pedestal near the entrance to a place that sold birds and monkeys. The thing's legs had been worn black and hairless by decades of passing hands.
"Saw one in Maryland once," the Finn said, "and that was a good 3 years after the pandemic. There's Arabs still trying to code them up from the DNA, but they always croak."
The animal's brown glass eyes seemed to follow them as they passed. Terzabashchian led them into a cafe near the core of the market, a low-ceilinged room that looked as though it had been in continuous operation for centuries. Skinny boys in soiled white coats dodged between the crowded tables, balancing steel trays with bottles of Turk Tuborg and tiny glasses of tea. Case bought a pack of Yehayawans from a vendor by the door. The Armenian was muttering to his Sanyo.
"Come," he said. "He is moving. Each night he rides the tunnel to the bazaar to purchase his mixture from Ali. Your woman is close. Come."
The alley was an old place, too old. The walls cut from blocks of dark stone. The pavement was uneven and smelled of a century's dripping gasoline, absorbed by ancient limestone.
"Can't see shit," he whispered to the Finn. "That's okay for sweetmeat," the Finn said.
"Quiet,"
said Terzabashchian, too loudly. Wood grated on stone or concrete. 10 meters down the alley, a wedge of yellow light fell across wet cobbles, widened. A figure stepped out, and the door grated shut again, leaving the narrow place in darkness. Case shivered.
"Now,"
Terzabashchian said, and a brilliant beam of white light, directed from the rooftop of the building opposite the market, pinned the slender figure beside the ancient wooden door in a perfect circle. Bright eyes darted left, right, and the man crumpled. Case thought someone had shot him. He lay face down, blonde hair pale against the old stone, his limp hands white and pathetic. The floodlight never wavered. The back of the fallen man's jacket heaved and burst, blood splashing the wall and doorway. A pair of impossibly long, rope-tendoned arms flexed grayish pink in the glare. The thing seemed to pull itself up out of the pavement through the inert, bloody ruin that had been Riviera. It was 2 meters tall, stood on 2 legs, and seemed to be headless. Then it swung slowly to face them, and Case saw that it had a head, but no neck. It was eyeless, the skin gleaming a wet intestinal pink. The mouth, if it was a mouth, was circular, conical, shallow, and lined with a seething growth of hairs or bristles, glittering like black chrome. It kicked the rags of clothing and flesh aside and took a step, the mouth seeming to scan for them as it moved. Terzabashtian said something in Greek or Turkish and rushed the thing, his arms spread like a man attempting to dive through a window. He went through it, into the muzzle flash of a pistol from the dark beyond the circle of light. Fragments of rock whizzed past Case's head. The fin jerked him down into a crouch. The light from the rooftop vanished, leaving him with mismatched afterimages of muzzle flash, monster, and white beam. His ears rang. Then the light returned, bobbing now, searching the shadows. Terzabashtian was leaning against a steel door, his face very white in the glare. He held his left wrist and watched blood drip from a wound in his left hand. The blond man, whole again, unbloodied, lay at his feet. Molly stepped out of the shadows, all in black, with her Fletcher in her hand.
"Use the radio,"
the Armenian said, through gritted teeth.
"Call in Mahmut. We must get him out of here. This is not a good place."
"Little prick nearly made it,"
the Finn said, his knees cracking loudly as he stood up, brushing ineffectually at the legs of his trousers.
"You were watching the horror show, right? Not the hamburger that got tossed out of sight. Real cute. Well, help him get his ass out of here. I gotta scan all that gear before he wakes up, make sure Armitage is getting his money's worth."
Molly bent and picked something up. A pistol.
"A Nambu," she said. "Nice gun."
Terzabashtian made a whining sound. Case saw that most of his middle finger was missing. With the city drenched in pre-dawn blue, she told the Mercedes to take them to Topkapi. The Finn and an enormous Turk named Mahmut had taken Riviera, still unconscious, from the alley. Minutes later, a dusty Citroen had arrived for the Armenian, who seemed on the verge of fainting.
"You're an asshole," Molly told the man, opening the car door for him. "You should have hung back. I had him in my sights as soon as he stepped out."
Terzabashtian glared at her.
"So we're through with you anyway."
She shoved him in and slammed the door.
"Run into you again, and I'll kill you,"
she said to the white face behind the tinted window. The Citroen ground away down the alley and swung clumsily into the street. Now the Mercedes whispered through Istanbul as the city woke. They passed the Beyoğlu Tunnel terminal and sped past mazes of deserted back streets, run-down apartment houses that reminded Case vaguely of Paris.
"What is this thing?"
he asked Molly as the Mercedes parked itself on the fringes of the gardens that surround the Seraglio. He stared dully at the Baroque conglomeration of styles that was Topkapi.
"It was sort of a private whorehouse for the king," she said, getting out, stretching. "Kept a lot of women there. Now it's a museum. Kind of like Finn's shop. All this stuff just jumbled in there. Big diamonds, swords, the left hand of John the Baptist."
"Like in a support vat?"
"Nah, dead. Got it inside this brass hand thing. Little hatch on the side so the Christians could kiss it for luck. Got it off the Christians about 1,000,000 years ago, and they never dust the goddamn thing, 'cause it's an infidel relic."
Black iron deer rusted in the gardens of the Seraglio. Case walked beside her, watching the toes of her boots crunch unkept grass made stiff by an early frost. They walked beside a path of cold octagonal flagstones. Winter was waiting, somewhere in the Balkans.
"That Terzi, he's grade-A scum," she said. "He's the secret police. Torturer. Real easy to buy out, too, with the kind of money Armitage was offering."
In the wet trees around them, birds began to sing.
"I did that job for you,"
Case said.
"The one in London.
I got something, but I don't know what it means." He told her the Corto story.
"Well, I knew there wasn't anybody name of Armitage in that screaming fist. Looked it up."
She stroked the rusted flank of an iron doe.
"You figure the little computer pulled him out of it? In that French hospital?"
"I figure Wintermute,"
Case said. She nodded.
Thing is, he said, do you think he knows he was Corto before? I mean, he wasn't anybody in particular by the time he hit the ward, so maybe Wintermute just...
Yeah, built him up from go.
Yeah.
She turned and they walked on. It figures. You know, the guy doesn't have any life going, in private. Not as far as I can tell. You see a guy like that, you figure there's something he does when he's alone, but not Armitage. Sits and stares at the wall, man. Then something clicks and he goes into high gear and wheels for Wintermute.
So why's he got that stash in London? Nostalgia?
Maybe he doesn't know about it, she said.
Maybe it's just in his name, right?
I don't get it, Case said.
Just thinking out loud. How smart's an AI, Case?
Depends. Some aren't much smarter than dogs. Pets. Cost a fortune anyway. The real smart ones are as smart as the touring heat is willing to let them get.
Look, you're a cowboy. How come you aren't just flat-out fascinated with those things?
Well, he said, for starts, they're rare. Most of them are military, the bright ones, and we can't crack the ice. That's where ice all comes from, you know? And then there's the touring cops, and that's bad heat. He looked at her. I don't know. It just isn't part of the trip.
Jockeys all the same, she said. No imagination.
They came to a broad rectangular pond where carp nuzzled the stems of some white aquatic flower. She kicked a loose pebble in and watched the ripples spread.
That's Wintermute, she said. This deal's real big, looks to me. We're out where the little waves are too broad. We can't see the rock that hit the center. We know something's there, but not why. I want to know why. I want you to go and talk to Wintermute.
I couldn't get near it, he said.
You're dreaming. Try.
Can't be done.
Ask the Flatline.
What do we want out of that Riviera? He asked, hoping to change the subject. She spat into the pond.
God knows. I'd as soon kill him as look at him. I saw his profile. He's a kind of compulsive Judas. Can't get off sexually unless he knows he's betraying the object of desire. That's what the file says. And they have to love him first. Maybe he loves them, too. That's why it was easy for Terzi to set him up for us, because he's been here 3 years, shopping politicals to the secret police. Probably Terzi let him watch when the cattle prods came out. He's done 18 in 3 years, all women aged 20 to 25. It kept Terzi in dissidence.
She thrust her hands into her jacket pockets.
Because if he found one he really wanted, he'd make sure she turned political. He's got a personality like a modern suit. The profile said it was a very rare type, estimated one in a couple of million, which anyway says something good about human nature, I guess.
She stared at the white flowers and the sluggish fish, her face sour.
I think I'm going to have to buy myself some special insurance on that Peter.
Then she turned and smiled, and it was very cold.
What's that mean? Never mind. Let's go back to Bailu and find something like breakfast. I got a busy night again tonight. Gotta collect his stuff from that apartment in Fenner. Gotta go back to the bazaar and buy him some drugs.
Buy him some drugs? How's he rate? She laughed.
He's not dying on the wire, sweetheart, and it looks like he can't work without that special taste. I like you better now anyway. You aren't so goddamn skinny.
She smiled.
So I'll go to Ali the dealer and stock up. You betcha.
Armitage was waiting in their room at the Hilton. Time to pack, he said, and Case tried to find the man called Corto behind the pale blue eyes and the tanned mask. He thought of Wage back in Chiba. Operators above a certain level tended to submerge their personalities, he knew, but Wage had had vices, lovers. Even, it had been rumored, children. The blankness he found in Armitage was something new.
"Where to now?"
he asked, walking past the man to stare down into the street.
"What kind of climate?"
"They don't have climate, just weather," Armitage said. "Here, read the brochure." He put something on the coffee table and stood.
"Did Riviera check out okay? Where's the Finn?"
"Riviera's fine. The Finn is on his way home." Armitage smiled, a smile that meant as much as the twitch of some insect's antenna. His gold bracelet clinked as he reached out to prod Case in the chest.
"Don't get too smart.
Those little sacks are starting to show wear, but you don't know how much." Case kept his face very still and forced himself to nod. When Armitage was gone, he picked up one of the brochures. It was expensively printed in French, English, and Turkish. "Freeside. Why wait?" The four of them were booked on a THY flight out of Yeselkoy Airport, transferred to Paris to the JAL shuttle. Case sat in the lobby of the Istanbul Hilton and watched Riviera browse bogus Byzantine fragments in the glass-walled gift shop. Armitage, his trench coat draped over his shoulders like a cape, stood in the shop's entrance. Riviera was slender, blonde, soft-voiced, his English accentless and fluid. Molly said he was 30, but it would have been difficult to guess his age. She also said he was legally stateless and traveled under a forged Dutch passport. He was a product of the rubble rings that fringe the radioactive core of old Bonn. Three smiling Japanese tourists bustled into the shop, nodding politely to Armitage. Armitage crossed the floor of the shop too quickly, too obviously, to stand beside Riviera. Riviera turned and smiled. He was very beautiful. Case assumed the features were the work of a Chiba surgeon. A subtle job, nothing like Armitage's blandly handsome blend of pop faces. The man's forehead was high and smooth, gray eyes calm and distant. His nose, which might have been too nicely sculpted, seemed to have been broken and clumsily reset. The suggestion of brutality offset the delicacy of his jaw and the quickness of his smile. His teeth were small, even, and very white. Case watched the white hands play over the imitation fragments of sculpture. Riviera didn't act like a man who'd been attacked the night before, drugged with a toxin flechette, abducted, subjected to the Finn's examination, and pressured by Armitage into joining their team. Case checked his watch. Molly was due back from her drug run. He looked up at Riviera again.
"I'll bet you're stoned right now, asshole,"
he said to the Hilton lobby. A graying Italian matron in a white leather tuxedo jacket lowered her Porsche glasses to stare at him. He smiled broadly, stood, and shouldered his bag. He needed cigarettes for the flight. He wondered if there was a smoking section on the JAL shuttle.
"See you, lady,"
he said to the woman, who promptly slid the sunglasses back up her nose and turned away. There were cigarettes in the gift shop, but he didn't relish talking with Armitage or Riviera. He left the lobby and located a vending console in a narrow alcove at the end of a rank of payphones. He fumbled through a pocket full of lirasi, slotting the small, dull alloy coins one after another, vaguely amused by the anachronism of the process. The phone nearest him rang. Automatically, he picked it up.
"Yeah."
Faint harmonics, tiny inaudible voices rattling across some orbital link, and then a sound like wind.
"Hello, Case."
A 50 lirasi coin fell from his hand, bounced and rolled out of sight across Hilton carpeting.
"Wintermute, Case. It's time we talk."
It was a chip voice.
"Don't you want to talk, Case?"
He hung up. On his way back to the lobby, his cigarettes forgotten, he had to walk the length of the ranked phones. Each rang in turn, but only once, as he passed.